हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जा Okay, so then Brahma Samhita, then we're in text 10 through 17. We start on 10. Shambhu and the Lord are non-different. So the verses then, this powerful Purusha, who assumes an indistinct form, is actually the Supreme Lord. Having appeared with an indistinct form, Shambhu, Mahavishnu then appeared with a distinct form as the master of all living entities in the universe. Brahma Samhita 5:10. Right, so then Jiva Goswami then makes the point. The first line replies to those with misconceptions, right? Meaning that, you know, Shiva's on his own. He's a Purusha standing on his own, when actually, no, it's the Supreme, he's the Supreme Lord. Means, but it doesn't mean Shiva is the Supreme. No, Vishnu is Supreme and he is his expansion, as will be mentioned here, like that. Therefore, he who produces the material realm and who is but an amsha of Mahavishnu is still called the powerful Purusha, the great Lord. Having assumed a subtle form, Shambhu then appeared with a distinct form, because he alone is distinct as a master of all exalted and degraded jivas of this universe. Then Baladeva Vidyabhushan, in his commentary Laghu Bhagavatamrita Shananga Rangada, then the present Brahma Samhita verses is directly discussed, because in the Laghu Bhagavatamrita and Bhir Bhagavatamrita, they're taking verses from the Bhagavatam and putting them in a particular order to then give some discussions on them and that. And so then on this Brahma Samhita verse, it comes up there, and then here Baladeva Vidyabhushan is making comments. Bhagavan Shambhu is the expansion of Swayam Rupa Krishna. He is called the Linga or representation of Krishna. Vishwakosha says Linga Chinne Numane Cha. Linga means a sign or inference, right? Something that's representing, like that. So in other words, the inference here is the Supreme Lord, but there's this feature of him. In other words, if Krishna as an expansion takes on a particular mood, right, then it's a matter of that quality will be prominent. You know, let's say like you have the incarnation of the four Kumaras, then it'll be, you know, knowledge and renunciation, or Prithu Maharaj, then it will be administration. You know, Narad Muni will be the presentation of pure bhakti. You know, Brahma, he means, well, he's in this case a jiva. So here, then Bhagavan Shambhu, or these others are also, they're representing the Lord, but the expansion has a particular function. So the expansion of Shambhu here, then you're getting the aspect of, he's taking care of that aspect where the Lord deals with the mode of ignorance. Right? Because creation, maintenance, destruction. Destruction means ignorance. Creation means passion. Maintenance means goodness. So in the spiritual world, then you don't have creation and destruction. You only have maintenance. So, and there is no tinge of passion or ignorance. So that means it's pure goodness. Well, in the material world, then you have goodness, but it's still tinged with passion and ignorance. Because there's no one mode is always prominent or exclusively prominent. It may be more prominent, but it's prominent with the other elements. Just like, let's say, I have a majority of potatoes, right, in a vegetable, and I put some, you know, a small amount of beans. right? Green beans to give some color, right? And green beans and some, let's say, cut tomatoes. So you have the whiteness of the potatoes, and then you have the green of the beans, and the red of the tomatoes. But it's predominantly potatoes, so it will be called a potato subject, right? You don't even necessarily say it'll be with that, but it's more of that that's there for the looks and all that. It's not, you know, now let's say it's mainly beans and I have some potatoes in it. It's the same, and some tomato. I'm going to call it a bean sub, right? So that's the thing, is that whatever's the prominence is what you call it. So you call it goodness when it's prominently, passion when it's prominently, ignorance when it's prominently. But otherwise, all three are always there. That's the way the material, because it's made of the three. The spiritual world is only made of pure goodness. But the material world has all three of these elements, because there is a creation and there is a destruction, right? So it has all those. So then here is, he's inferring the Lord, but this aspect of the Lord of where he controls the ignorance, but he doesn't directly deal with the external energy. But still, no one other than him can control, because he's the basis of existence. Therefore, this feature of Sankarsana as Shambhu, you know, that deals with that aspect of ignorance and the living entities who are in ignorance and all that, then that's still, it's still the Lord, but he takes on this point so that, you know, Prabhupada gives the example of Brahma Samhita when we get on further in the Govindam prayers section. Then it's going to talk about, it's like milk that's been turned into yogurt. So it's still milk, but it's in the form of yogurt. So it does yogurt stuff. It doesn't do milk stuff. Does that make sense? So it's a feature of milk, because milk can do all that, but yogurt can do a specific thing. Bhagavan refers to the Lord of Vaikuntha, endowed with the six powers. Right, so the Lord Bhagavan, he has all the six opulences, you know, or all the Kalyana Gunas, you know, the what's it? Jnana, Bala, Virya, Aishwarya, and Shakti and Kriya, isn't it? Yeah, unless I'm mixing one of those with the. Yeah, whatever. So, in here is that he's endowed with the six powers. Shambhu means he who creates good fortune, right? So Bhagavan Shambhu means Krishna in this form as Shambhu, then he creates good fortune to living entities. So how is that happening here? Appearing as Sankarsana in the second Vyuha, he creates the bodies for the jivas who are previously merged in Prakriti. Right, so they're merged into this material energy, and so then those bodies are created. Thus, he is called Shambhu. Right? Does that make sense? So he's dealing with these jivas, right? And it mentions to Shambhu means he who creates good fortune. So that means dealing with those living entities that are merged into material energy, then he creates good fortune. So what's that good fortune? They can again come out and have the ability to perform activities and to move forward in Krishna consciousness, right? That's their good fortune. Just going around the cycle of samsara, that's not good fortune. But having the opportunity that they could take up devotional service, now that's good fortune. Then taking it up, now that's actual good fortune. His form is knowledge or consciousness, jyoti rupaha. By Shambhu being under Krishna's control, being his linga, right? Because the linga or representation of Krishna is controlled by Krishna, it's his representation. You know, just like the government has an ambassador who is the linga of the government or representation of the government, right? But the linga, the ambassador, even though he represents the country, the whole country, he still is under the control of the country. It's not that He's separate, or he only has that position because of that. That makes sense. So Krishna has expanded for that aspect to take care of or bring good fortune. You know, Shiva also means auspiciousness. So we see there who creates good fortune, or Shiva is who, you know, the auspiciousness. So that whole Krishna's position as Swayam Rupa can be understood just as one can understand a bull by seeing his distinctive dewlap, right? Because on the bulls, they have that bit of flappy skin under their neck like that, and it's something that only cows have. No other animal has that. So in logic, you know, then it's said, you know, Gotama is giving the example that you want to be exact in logic, as exact as possible, because if you're not exact, then a fault can be found. So let me say, define a cow. So it's then someone would say, an animal that gives milk, right? And generally people would be okay with that, but then so many animals give milk, you know, like that. So then that doesn't perfectly design. So they say, okay, well, this gives milk, has horns, but there's also animals that has milk, has horns, you know, has four legs, has a tail, has a head, you know, like that, eats grass. So what sets it apart is the dewlap. The dewlap on the neck, others don't have. And so then if you say the animal with a dewlap, even if you mention nothing else, it means the cow or the bull. Right? So then here, then you can see the distinctive dewlap. So you can see the qualities of Krishna. They're distinct, you know, having that full or Swayam Rupa, that full form. Then others don't have that, you know, like that. You know, so having all the qualities, like 64 qualities of Krishna, and then four of them just Krishna alone in Braj has, right? So then you go out from there, then there's 60 qualities, right, that are had. And then of that, then there's that all Vishnu Tattva has. Then you go out of that, then there's 55 that Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma manifest, right? And then there's 50 that the Jiva manifests, right? So it's going to be there. He only has those 50 qualities, Shambhu. He's only dealing with those, because beyond that, because he's not creating universes, he's not doing all those different things. He's just working with the living entities, the Lord of the living entities, the exalted and the degraded Jivas of the universe. Right, so you have the great sages, you know, Brahma, the sages, the Prajapatis, and then you have all the other living entities. So then he's the Lord of all that. And so just that aspect. But the greater ones, like creating the universes, all that, he doesn't do. Does that make sense? Make sense. Because Krishna is the Swayam Rupa with Shambhu, Mahavishnu, as his Vilas form, right? So there's a particular pastime and stuff that he's doing. Shambhu is called Linga, or his representative. She who is the material cause, Upadana, right? It means the material cause. I mean, Upadana are ingredients, and the ingredients are the material cause. Like, if I want to cook rice, I have to start with the ingredient rice. And from that, I can get rice. So the cause of the cooked rice is the uncooked rice. That's the material. But beyond that, you have then the utensils used, they're the assistants in that. Then you have the actual cook who's doing that, right? And those cook is working by the principles that are there that make allow things to function, right? And the laws. And then you have Krishna as the origin of all that. Right? So the Upadana is the ingredient cause, or the material cause, right? Consisting of Mahatattva and other elements, Yonihi, means that that's it's the source, right? They all come from the Prakriti. So that's the Yoni, the origin of all these within manifested, but her origin is Krishna. And she's called the inferior Shakti, matter made of three gunas. The Mahatattva, Bijam, or the seed, is a result of Krishna's Amsha, Shankarshana, Mahavishnu, desiring to glance upon Maya, right? So Mahavishnu wants to glance upon Maya because that's why he's here, to take care of those Jivas that are unfortunate, and so to create their good fortune. But he himself, as Vishnu, doesn't interact with the external energy. So therefore, as a transformation, as Shambhu, than there. So he glances, but that glance is Shambhu, right? So that's why I have the indistinct, and then after you get the distinct. Mahatattva is Prakriti endowed with the unlimited jivas, right? If it's just without the jivas, then you get Pradhan, right? And when the Pradhan is separated and you have all the different elements, but it's still not combined according to the laws of nature, and that then it's avyakta, the unmanifest, right? But now when you create all the different opportunities that are there for the living entity, you know, all the universes, all the what do you call those? The the species of life, everything like that. All that, then you can get then you get Mahatattva, right? Because it says here, Mahatattva is Prakriti endowed with unlimited jivas, right? And the jivas are there for their specific material desire. So therefore, it's also called, Mahatattva is called sutra, right? Because they're there with a particular purpose, right? By the association of the Vaishnavas, then they take up devotional service and go back to Godhead. But otherwise, their purpose there, why the jiva has left the spiritual position for the material, is to try to enjoy himself as the controller and enjoyer. Right. So when you have the living entity who has now his consciousness covered by ignorance, and we're saying, we can say avidya, like that. We're not talking about the mode of ignorance of the material world. The jiva already is under the control of avidya before he's even, you know, in the universe. Because you could say is that, no, but when he has that, he's within. But at the same time as you have jivas who can liberate themselves, you know, by Krishna's mercy, he's Mukunda, they can get out of the universe and be liberated on the platform, the spiritual platform. But they can't get into the spiritual world, right? I mean, if you're on the spiritual platform, you're dealing with Brahman, and Brahman is everything. But at the same time as they can't leave that, does that make sense? They can't leave and go into the spiritual. They have to stay within the material because they still have the linga sharir, which is linga. No, that's yeah. You have the stula sharir, karana sharir. That's the karana sharir. Still have the karana sharir where they are connected with. I am the controller and enjoyer. So it's already ignorance. I mean, in the way of avidya, means lacking knowledge. So they can still have that position, though they're not actually controlled by the modes. They're on the platform of Shuddhasattva, though their consciousness is not pure. Then when they go into the universe, then you can actually interact with the modes and get things done, right? So you see, the whole thing is very, very subtle, like that. So you're dealing, because consciousness is more subtle than the subtle body. So if you have polluted consciousness, that's the I'm the controller and enjoyer. Pure consciousness is I'm servant of Krishna. So that's why if one has the mood, I am servant of Krishna, then you're actually situated on the spiritual platform. Now, if you do that in devotion, then you will be functioning within the transcendental realm, right? So spiritual as a platform, everything is Brahman, so it's all that. But now it's how you, what is your action? Because being a jiva, you're expanding from the samvit potency, which means activity and knowledge. So sat chit ananda, it means we're expanding from the samvit portion of that, right? Which means that the chit, or the activity, the abhideya aspect. So we assist in abhideya, right? And because we're doing that, we're going to experience the ananda that Krishna and his devotees then experience, you know, in the pastimes. Yes, Ananda Chaitanya.
Anugishama, so where does the consciousness lie, as in Is it on the in the like a part of the spirit soul, as in how is the consciousness, like how is it done?
Means that the spirit soul is conscious. He is consciousness because he's a minute particle of consciousness. But that's made up of Satchit and Ananda. Right? The consciousness can, you can be aware of these three things. Right? Means the existence of something, the activity you can perform in that existence and gain results, and then the particular experience you gain from that both existence and all that. And so, does that make sense? So, in other words, existence then means you're existing also. I perform activity and you experience things, right? And then the action, the chit, means you have that knowledge and that of the existence and of what can be gained from that or experienced from that. And when you're in the point of the experience, the ananda, it is still within the context of the action and results, action performed and results gained in a particular situation. Right, so it's just the prominent aspect of each. So each has all that three. So we're conscious of all that. So that's the point. Now, polluted consciousness means we don't see it in connection with Krishna. Right, so that's avidya. Then you become specifically then covered by the modes in a gross and subtle body to be able to express that avidya. Does that make sense? So that's why the Mayavadis and the impersonalists, even if they become liberated, right? That, there's a good chance the Mayavadis never do, but if the impersonalists, the Brahmavadis, they get liberated, then they come to that platform. But that platform, they're still covered by avidya because they don't really know who they are. They know I'm Brahman, but they don't know I'm servant of Krishna. So it's only when you know you're servant of Krishna, then you have an actual proper identity. Right? Because otherwise they say I'm Brahman, but as Brahman, I'm, yes, that's there, but I am servant of Krishna. And to, and the purpose of that is to please Krishna. So to develop love for Krishna and please Krishna on that platform of prema, or priti. That's the whole point. So action is our natural thing. That's why the jivas are always busy, always acting. That's why it's very, being a tree is not that great, right? They can kind of move around a bit in the wind and stuff like that. And when they grow, they move a little bit, but it's not really that great, right? But so, and they don't have, and their consciousness is just, they can understand the six transformations. They're born, they grow, they maintain, they reproduce, they dwindle, they die. So, but the moving ones on top of that, it's that and eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So you see there's a higher level of consciousness. Does that make sense? So the
Definitely.
non-moving is the lowest.
So Maharaj, when we say that avidya is there, that means the sat aspect, as in the sambandha gyan is not there, that's why they won't move forward.
Yeah. Because their knowledge of Krishna and their relation with Krishna is not there. So that's
Definitely.
avidya. Because Krishna being everything, how can you know anything if you don't understand its relation to Krishna? That's why we say even great, great material scholars are still in ignorance. Because they don't actually know what it something is. Can you imagine, you take something, I take this. I don't know that it's a case for a phone. But I'm going in there with my ion microscope, looking at things. I'm seeing, oh, there's this path here, these things with holes and all that, and it's some different thing than this, and going into it and analyzing, what it's made out of and the molecular structure of it and the molecular structure of, what's around. And then there's, there's crater here, there's depression here where they, put a logo in, but I just know that it goes down here, but it's symmetrical. So, somehow or another, it must have something, it must have got folded or this or that, or, different things, like you fold space and move through space and like that. I go into all that. Can I call that real knowledge? I don't even know it's a phone case. So I come up with so many things, but it's a great, endeavor and expenditure of intelligence and energy But is it real knowledge? Because you don't know what it is. So if you don't know how it connects to Krishna, you don't really know, because whatever you think it is temporary. You know, oh, but we know the universe. That's also temporary. To Krishna is 3/4 of a second. The whole expansion of the universe, him going inside and being there for some time and filling up the universe with half, then expanding Brahma, then Brahma doing his meditation and all that for, you know, so much time and all that, then finally doing the creation and all that in his lifetime being 151, 100, no, 311 trillion years. So that's all there. And then, you know, then it's destroyed and all that. And then it merges back into the Lord. And for the Lord, it's how long it takes to breathe out and breathe in. So it's 3/4 seconds, it's not even a second. So can you actually, and that's on the level of Brahma. So imagine everything else. You know, history, I do all this nice stuff in history and all that. And where is it now? Right? Where are the Romans now? I mean, someone who lives in Rome will call themselves a Roman, but the culture that was there 2,000 years ago, it's gone. You know, so that's the whole thing, is that everything just goes. So is it real knowledge? So, and then you can say, oh, well, unless we learn from it. Okay, you learn from it. Okay, great. So, but learn from it for what? So I can do my job and get my money for what? And then you'll be dead. And then next life. So that's the whole thing. It's just based on ignorance. So only when you understand it in relationship to Krishna, then you can say it's actual knowledge. So if it's Brahman or Paramatma, it's incomplete knowledge. You have partial knowledge, you could say, but it's not complete until you get to Bhagavan. You know, at the stage of Bhagavan, then it has the actual proper level. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, Maharaj, thank you.
Very good. Okay. The offspring of Maya, the bodies of the jivas, right? Because the jivas themselves are coming from Krishna. But because they've left Krishna, don't know Krishna, then they are going to the external energy rather than being the internal. And so she creates the bodies, right? Just like the mother. The mother creates the body, but she doesn't create this. She doesn't, it's not this, the soul, right? The father gives the soul. And then the mother creates the body around that soul. So same way as Krishna gives the souls, the jivas, and then the material energy creates all the bodies and everything. The bodies, the situations, the facilities, the everything like that. So that arises from the combination of the glance of Sankarsana, who is called Linga, and Maya, Yoni, right? So the Linga and the Yoni. So you have the masculine and feminine principle. So it starts from here. So to say is, oh, you know, there's no, what do you call it? You can't define masculine, feminine as how you feel, this and that. No, it's actually defined. That's how everything's created. And we'll see from the Brahma Samhita that it'll mention that because of this point of Linga and Yoni, then you have everything in the creation is divided into male and female. Everything has that. You know, either it's either. It has how you say it, the physical body nature, the subtle body nature, you know, or some other qualities that will put it into one capacity or another. But it's always broken down into these two, right? Although the offspring is said to belong to Prakriti, Maheshwari, this is a secondary meaning, since she is dependent on Sankarsana for the creation of bodies. The Purusha, possessor of Shakti or Maya, Shaktiman, the expansion of Krishna, Linga Rupi, is called Maheshwara. The Great Lord. Sankarsana, Mahavishnu, appeared as the controller of Prakriti given charge by Krishna, Linge. Right? So, therefore, Mahavishnu, right, then there's that feature of Sankarsana. Then he then expands as this point of Linga of Shambhu or Shiva. Does that make sense? So we're dealing with that feature. That's why we see that Mahavishnu can be called Sadashiva or Mahavishnu, because he's that feature of Mahavishnu. Right? So he is Mahavishnu, but at the same time he is Shambhu. But we're talking about Sadashiva. We're not talking about the material world. But Shambhu, the in the material world, who the Shiva aspect that enters, that's then the demigod that we have in the universe. So he's still an expansion of that Shiva Tattva. Does that make sense? Like that. Text 11. Sahasra Shirsha Purushas Sahasraakshas Sahasrapata Sahasra Bahir Bahir No Bahur Sahasra Bahur Vishvatma Sahasram Shas Sahasra Suhu Sahasra Suhu. This form of Mahavishnu, the soul of the universe, creates countless universes. Because he has countless avatar forms within the universe, he is said to have countless heads, countless eyes, countless feet, and countless arms. This shloka, whose first line matches the first verse of Purusha Shukta, glorifies Puranodakshai Vishnu, the source of all incarnations within the material world. Right? Because eventually it goes back to him. So he expands in these aspects. Then, you know, in the universe, you have Garbhadakshai. He expands as Kiradakshai, and Kiradakshai then is the super soul. Then he's dealing with all living. So in that way, there's unlimited. But at the same time, as Garbhadakshai Vishnu, he is that potencies of how everything pervades everything, the laws and everything that are there. So therefore, also there's unlimited because the potential for it is. Right, but all that's coming from Mahavishnu because he is expanded into all those unlimited avatars, so he has unlimited, you know, how you say the countless avatars. So Sahasra Shirsha, you know, unlimited heads, Sahasraksha, Sahasrapat, you know, so all of his countless heads, countless eyes, countless feet, and countless arms. Right, so all that is there. So we see is that. You see is what feature you're talking about and then see it in that context because that comes all from Mahavishnu and Mahavishnu is expanding for Shankarshan, right? And so within the Purusha avatars, he's the feature of Shankarshan because he expanded from Shankarshan as an umsha of Shankarshan. Then you're going to have him in the universe as Prajumna and then as Kiradakshai Vishnu or Paramatma as Aniruta. Right, so there's going to be different flavors that are there. So that he's the existence of the whole thing, and that's Sankarsana, that he's the attractive element in everything. That's going to be Prajumna or Garbhadakshai Vishnu, right? Because he's in everything and how it makes it how it's appreciated, and that's there. And then you have the aspect of Kiradakshai Vishnu as Paramatma, then with the living entities and in every atom, between every atom, like this, so that he's there, and then how the living entity can and deal with that to become happy. So Aniruddha, right? They experience the aspects of the transformations of the mind. Jiva Goswami, Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates as follows. The word thousand means that he has countless expansions everywhere, not just a thousand, right? So when you want to talk a lot, you say a thousand or something, you say, you know, like we say there's a million or a koti, which is 10 million. But it when you're dealing with the Lord, that's just to give you an idea that it's a lot, right? Like that. The second canto describes this form. Karanodakshai Vishnu is the first incarnation of the Supreme Lord, and he is the master of eternal time, space, cause, and effects, mind, the elements, material ego, modes of nature, the senses, the universal form of the Lord, Garbhadakshai Vishnu, and the sum total of all living beings, both moving and non-moving. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.6.42. So everything, what you see in the Mahatattva, the one quarter of the cosmos, that's all expanding from Karanodakshai Vishnu, right? It means he's taking care of all that, right? Then with it, so you could say he's the super soul of the material cosmos, right? And then Pradyumna means Garbhodakshay, then he's going to be the Paramatma of the individual universe. And Kiradakshay Vishnu is going to be the Paramatma of the individual living entity. Right? Does that make sense? So depending upon what's the context, then you see who you're talking about. The commentary of Sridhar Swami says that the first Purusha avatar of the Supreme Lord for putting Prakriti in motion, a form for carrying out pastimes, is the person who is described in the scriptures as having 1,000 heads. Right? So Karana Daksha, he has like that, and then he comes in the universe as the 1,000-headed one who lives with Brahma. Right, he has the aspect of Garbhodaksha Vishnu, but that aspect of the 1,000 heads, that's the form in which he lives with Brahma, right? Because Brahma is at the upper part of the universe, and so he stays up there with 1,000 heads, but on the bottom of the universe, then he's as Garbhodaksha Vishnu. He's sleeping on Ananta and performing those pastimes, right? Okay. Then text 12. Yoga Nidra, the divine sleep of Mahavishnu. The Supreme Lord is called Narayana because the waters of the Karna ocean arise from his eternal form. Narayana is non-different from Sankarsana. This Mahavishnu lies in Yoga Nidra in this ocean. Countless avatars reside in him. Okay. The verse explains, that means, I say, he's called Narayana because he sleeps in the ocean. But the Karna ocean arises from his eternal form. And therefore, he's also known as Karana Dakshai Vishnu. Or here, Karana Vasai, the Lord who rests on the Karna ocean. Right? Like, so Garbhodakshayi is he who rests on the Garbhodak. Kirodakshayi is who rests on the milk ocean, right? This verse explains more about the position of Karanadakshay Vishnu and his activities, or lack thereof. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains, Yoga Nidra, divine sleep, is spoken of as ecstatic trance, which is of the nature of the bliss of the true subjective personality. Right? So the Lord is always in that blissful state. So then here as in his Yoga Nidra, that's just being absorbed in that ecstatic state. The above mentioned Rama Devi is Yoga Nidra in the form of Yoga Maya. Right, so he's there with his consort Rama Devi, right? Is Yoga Nidra in the form of Yoga Maya, right? So then you have also there the internal potency that is dealing with the spiritual world, right? Means Lakshmi is there in maintenance, but when you come into the material world, then you're dealing with the creation, maintenance, and destruction. So therefore, his consort is Rama Devi. And it sees the form of Yoga Maya. So that's Yoga Maya is what's going to transform as Mahamaya. Right? So you say Rama Devi, then is transforming, but it's that aspect of in the form of Yoga Maya. She's who's transformed. So Yoga Maya, Mahamaya. So Rama Devi doesn't transform as such. Her expansion transforms. Does that make sense? Or that form of Yoga Maya is what transforms. So it makes sense, just as Mahavishnu, it's not that he's, how you say, he, a feature of him, is transforming as Shambhu. So her feature, Yoga Maya, is transforming as Mahamaya, or the Prakriti. Does that make sense? So this is where you get the transformation. Yeah. As will become evident in future verses, it is called Nidra sleep because Vishnu is indifferent to the material world, right? So therefore, he's just staying in his trance of ecstasy, you know, like that, because he's not interested in the material world. He's indifferent. Indifferent means you're not for it, you're not against it, right? It means Much of the time in English nowadays, how it's used in different means you're against it. But actually, it just means you don't care any way, either way. You know, so in other words, the term meh, then that's what we mean, right? It's just like, who cares? You know, it could be there, not be there, like that. So the point is because the living entities have that tendency to choose and become, therefore, how do you say, indifferent to the Lord, therefore then the material world is there. It's going to be because the jivas have that ability to choose like that. Then you're always going to have the material world. But the living entities that are here are always going to be changing. So all living entities will go back to Godhead, right? But it's just that some of them decide to check this place out before doing that, you know? Secondly, it's called yoga because he's blissfully absorbed in his spiritual pastimes. Jiva Goswami comments on this verse as follows. The water known as the ocean of the Karana water appeared from Narayana. This water is non-different from Narayana or Sankarsana. This means that this form lying on the Karana ocean is a portion or amsa of the Sankarsana of the Chakravyuha, situated as Avarana, protective deities in Goloka. His activity is described as yoga nidra, being completely absorbed in the bliss derived from his spiritual form, right? Because his form is bliss. So he's absorbed in the bliss of his form. You know, just his own existence is bliss. The derivation of the word Narayana is as follows. The word, quote, the word apaha and nara are synonyms for water. Since the waters are considered the sons of Nara, the primeval male or Mahavishnu, since these waters take shelter, Ayana, of Mahavishnu from the ancient past, he is called Narayana. Vishnu Purana 1:4:6. And we see the same point as being made in Manu, because there is, he's talking, you know, he starts with Mahavishnu, but then, you know, basically very quickly comes to describing Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. And so then Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, again, he expands the water in the universe. And then because that water has come from him, it takes shelter in him like that, then he is known as Narayana. And all living entities are taking shelter like this. So there's so these features come up. So then it's being explained here. Right? Yeah, so you have the Chaturvyuha in as you know, the second Chaturvyuha that are protecting Goloka. And so from Sankarsana then comes the Purushavatar, right? So he bends there, has that mood because there's the mood of dealing with the material world. So that's going to have the same kind of flavor, right? So you're going to have that aspect. It's said that feature of dealing with the material world is originally there in Balaram, but Balaram doesn't manifest it. He's expanded as Sankarshan, who expands as Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu then manifests those three moods: I'm the creator, maintainer, and destroyer. Does that make sense? That, yeah. Okay. Oh, this was seven. Where is this? Oh, 10 through 17. Okay. Then 13, the universal creation. The jivas, in combination with Prakriti, had been resting within the hair holes of Sankarsana, Mahavishnu. They then take the form of golden eggs, the primitive forms of universes, covered with the five great elements before they combine. Okay, then footnote 11. The golden eggs are shells of universes composed of the elements in an uncombined state, right? Because you have the outside form of the universe, right? Because you have the layers. Because you have the 14 worlds within, But then you have the coverings of the universe. And then I think there's seven coverings. So the last covering, the outside, is Prakriti. Right? So that's there. So that you know, that unmanifest aspect. Right? So that's why the primitive forms, right? The seed refers to the jivas who will be placed in the womb of Prakriti. First, being in a settled state, this combination of jivas then becomes situated within the hair holes of Sankarsana. Then they take the form of golden eggs. Covered by the five gross elements, in an uncombined, subtle state, Brahma says in the 10th canto, "What am I, a small creature measuring seven spans of my own hand? I am enclosed in a pot-like universe, covered by material nature. The total material energy, false ego, ether, air, fire, water, and earth. And what is your glory? Unlimited universes pass through the pores of your body, just as particles of dust pass through the openings of a screened window." Right, means when you have a screen window, when there's no, you don't really see it. But when you have a screen window, because then the sun comes and you see the light just coming through that little hole. And then if you look at it, you can see the dust floating in the, in that ray of light. Right. But if there's no screen, then generally you don't see it. You know, you just see so much light. But here, then you can see, because you can see something moving that comes across it. Well, if it's the whole thing, your eyes won't catch what's there. But when it's there, you can actually see the point. So in the in the third canto, the universe is also described. That was Bhagavatam 10.14.11. This phenomenal world is expanded to a diameter of 4 billion miles. As a combination of eight material elements transformed into 16 further categories, within and without, as follows. The layers or elements covering the universe are each 10 times thicker than the one before, and all the universes clustered together appear like atoms in a huge combination. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:11, 40 through 41. Right? So earth means you have the earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. So they're made out of that, right? Means the eight material elements. Transfer into 16 further categories, which then you get the, what do you call it? The gross senses, the knowledge acquiring senses, the working senses, and then the tan mantras that the senses perceive, you know, like smell, touch, taste, like this. So those there, and then you have polluted consciousness, right? So then you get these like that. Or you can say is that those together, that's all controlled by the mind, right? But the mind's already been mentioned before, so it might be mentioning it twice here, or if it's just sticking to just the exact end, then the only one left is polluted consciousness. That's why you'd identify with those. Text 14 through 15. The prototypical guna avatars. Oh, did I finish this? No, I didn't finish the footnote. Golden eggs are shells of universes composed of the elements in an uncombined state. Mahatattva alone does not form the eggs. The elements arise in the following manner. Mahatattva manifests ahankara in sattva, rajas, and tamas. Right? Tajasa, rajasa, and
Vaikarika.
Huh? Vaikarika.
Vaikarika. Yeah.
So then that's the ahankara in those states, because there's a false ego that goes with each mode. You know, I'm doing this, I'm creating this, I'm destroying this, you know, I'm maintaining this. You know, I do my duty, so I get good profit, and I have my own weird philosophies that have nothing to do with reality. You know, so that kind of thing is, these are the mentalities that are going there, right? So that's why you see, is someone who has the point of duties, they can maintain things. Someone with passion can create things, but can't necessarily maintain. And the ones that ignorance, and they destroy things. They can't create. They can't maintain. Right. In some extent, yeah. The sattva portion gives rise to mind and sense devatas. The rajas proportion gives rise to the senses. The tamas portion gives rise to the sense objects and the five gross elements. Right? So then you're going to get, that's where you're getting here, the mind and the sense devatas, because the sense devata means someone's in charge of taste, someone's, like your varuna is in charge of taste, someone's in charge of seeing, someone's in charge of smelling, someone's like this. So that's the tan mantras, the mind and the tan mantra. Then you have the senses themselves that comes from passion, because they do that work. The tamas, it gives rise to the sense object, means what it's made out of that you can sense. That you can see, that you can, that with the senses you can perceive, right? And the five gross elements, because that's what everything's made out of. The elements in an uncombined state form into coverings of the universe, right? So you have they're combined together, right? Then by the glance, they come into their separate points. Like that, then we see is that those separated ones, then they cover the universe, right? So when you say is that they're all the elements, but you see the mind and sense devatas, that it comes in the one, right? And then you have earth, water, fire, air, ether, right? Then you're going to have, I think, I'm not sure what's a, then Prakriti will be the last one. I'm not sure the one in between, if that's avyakta, which means they're all the elements are there, but they're not formed into anything. But there might be something else that it is, but I know of you have seven of them. By the will of Vishnu within the universe, the five gross elements then combine with each other to become functional for making the planets and bodies within the universe. This is described in Brahma Samhita, verse 19. So, that means everything in the universe is being combined out of those, right? And each those means the first one is 10 times more than this. What that means is 4 billion across, right? Half of it's full of water, so it's 2 billion left, right? Like that. But still, it's 4 billion across. So 10 times that, the Earth is 40 billion miles. So even you calculate, okay, that means what's the sphere? The volume of the sphere, it's not going to be anywhere near what just the earth element is. So there's plenty of stuff, right? Does that make sense? Yeah, so 10 times. So it's interesting that the scientists say that they can only account for 1/10 of the mass, because how things move in the universe in certain aspects. It would move that way if there was more mass somewhere. So they can't understand where's this mass. So they talk about, they try to do it within the universe, dark matter and this and that, this super dense, so it acts like more, but it's just the coverings of the universe. So they somehow know they catch a little glimpse of something like this, but they can't actually put it together. So it's not complete. So that's the thing, is that that's your warehouse, and as you need more, then more is made, and as you need less, it goes back there, right? Because there's going to be times when things are more and more less. There's more people, there's less people, there's more whatever's going on, less. So as you need it, it's given, and as you don't, it goes back. So pretty straightforward. Just like you have stuff in the go down, you need it, you take it out. You don't need it, there's actually put it back. Does that make sense? It's pretty straightforward. Okay. Then, the prototypical guna avatars. Eternal Mahavishnu, the soul of the universes, with countless heads enters into each of the universal eggs by means of expanded forms, Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva. From his left side, Mahavishnu created Vishnu, and from his right side, Brahma, he created the effulgent form of Vishnu from between his eyebrows. Oh, okay. Okay. Like that. Okay, so you have different ways. So, yeah. Okay. Jiva Goswami explains how these forms first manifest outside the universe, then expand inside. The forms mentioned here, created outside the universe by Mahavishnu, are the sources of their further expansion situated within each universe. Just as these forms exist within each universe, they also exist outside, residing over the universes as a whole. Right? So you're always going to have the primary creation is what's outside the universe. The secondary creation is what's inside the universe. Right? It doesn't mean that because the universes themselves are part of the primary creation, the outside shell and everything. Right? Because it mentions the golden universe's golden eggs. That's all part of the primary. But when what Brahma does inside the universe and the manifestation of the 14 worlds and all the living entities, the bodies of the living entities, that's the secondary. So outside the universe, then you already have, if there's the three guna avatars in the universe, they're already outside. Right, just like the laws, the first, you know, the laws of nature, and the codes of and the original spiritual codes, those are already there before inside the universe. Then they come into the universe, right? So that's why everything works on this principle. That's why, you know, according to the how you say, dare we say it? What is it? The essentialists. Or essentialism, you know, it means everything has its fundamental laws on which it functions. So those fundamental laws are before the universe, inside the universe, the secondary creation is manifest. That's why we can say with confidence that this is how it works, because that has always been there. It's there before. Then this universe has it. It works on the same laws. Therefore, you can say dogs will do this, trees will do that. You know, everything goes. You know, as we saw before, everything's manifest from the combination of linga and yoni. So it's all going to be in the form of masculine and feminine. It's not going to be otherwise. You can say what you like. No, but I feel it's like this. That doesn't matter. What you feel is a combination of the modes, and because you want to go against the laws of nature and the spiritual codes, that's called ignorance. So ignorance means what's right you say is wrong, and what's wrong you say is right. That's just how it works. So yes, what you're doing is a manifestation of that, and you're an illusion. But yeah, what to do? So all these different features then naturally are there, and that's why it's already there in the first part. You know, it's already there beforehand, right? You know, just like you have Sada Shiva, and then you're going to have Shiva in the universe, right? Does that make sense? And then you have Mahavishnu is there in his form as Vishnu, then he comes in as Garbhadakshay, right? And then Hiranyagarbha, that, and you have the universes, then he comes inside as Brahma. Yes, Mataji.
As described here, does this mean that this concept of generation through genital, like, it only arises in the material world? Because like Srila Prabhupada explains that the Lord also has genital, but he doesn't use it he doesn't need to use it, because like he can generate Brahma from the lotus, or he can glance or something. But is this only in the material world? Like here is described.
You could say yes, means to create things, and it has to be like that. But the point is it has its origin in the Lord. So already the masculine feminine principle, he's masculine and therefore he has his qualities. And then he expands the feminine, and then the feminine has their qualities. Right? So it's an original thing there. But what we're dealing with here, where there's the aspect is, it'll come up that I think it's about 20 or something, that everything here is identified according by the genital. right? So that's why a child is born, you say it's masculine or feminine, right? Like that. Nowadays, I've heard in some places or countries, they don't. They may mention what it was, you know, the biological aspect, but they don't say it's male or female because it's up to the child to decide for themselves. It's like, you know, all this kind of nonsense.
I heard it is for the sake of business of making these operations.
Yeah, of course. They make tons of money, tons of money. It's, if it didn't make money, I can guarantee they wouldn't be doing it. Right? That's the point. Why do you decide to? Because a few people want to be a doctor because they really want to help people and save people. Right? And they may maintain that or may not because around them, everything, most people are going because it makes more money. That's why you do it. But you have to, of course, have the brains and the ability to do it. So you have to be qualified. But in any case, it's business. So yes, like that. And, you know, it placates because, oh, you feel like this and that. And it seems like it's progressive means that it's always changing. Well, another definition is progress means based on the same platform, you're expanding that and developing it. But the leftist side, it's always changing. Therefore, because conservative means to conserve, to keep, to not change. We're changing. They're doing the nice things. But if you change, if you in the change, you're going to come across some positions that are quite good and useful. But then if you change from that into one that's less useful and continue on your path, was that considered intelligent? Was that considered good? Right. You know, for dinner, I could put down some nice, you know, the, you know, prepared preparation with all kinds of detail and all that. Or I could just bring in a bucket of, you know, cow dung and plunk it down on the table and said, you know, go for it. Then you could say, is that that's not good? And you say, what do you mean? That's not food. What do you mean? There's so many bugs out there eating it out in the yard. And I thought, why the bugs should get everything? Why shouldn't we take advantage? So therefore, here it is. Then you can say, no, this is stupid. So that's the problem is that they want to, in other words, they want to be able to say what things are. They want to establish. They want, we can make men, we can make women, we can make this, we can make that. And they promise that, yeah, we'll just combine chemicals one day and it'll turn into something. And therefore, they all say, oh, we make the robots and all this, or the computers. One day they'll come alive and all that, and then they'll kill all the humans. And all that, and you know, so why the humans? Why not the trees or something else? The fish, you know, but whatever it is. So they're going after all these things because they think they can create it. They can do, you know. So that's the whole point. That's their point. Is that, you know, it's our knowledge. We create it. We do it. We're all that. So it's just false ego. So therefore, it's based in ignorance, like we said, the avidya, that they don't know Krishna. And then as they get away from the natural laws of nature given by Krishna, the spiritual codes of conduct, then they get away from that. Now they're dealing with the mundane, you know, the guna of ignorance. Like that. Does that make sense? Yes, no. Looks like maybe she froze, or is it only for me she froze, or for froze for everybody?
Everyone.
Oh, okay. Because if it's just me, then that means there's something wrong over here. But then everybody else is moving, so then okay. If everyone freezes, it may be me. But if everyone else is moving, and only she freezes, but okay. Okay, we'll find out after. Okay, these forms mentioned here, created outside the universe by Mahavishnu, are the sources of the further expansions situated within each universe. Just as these forms exist within each universe, they also exist outside, presiding over the universes as a whole. Among these forms, Prajapati, mentioned in this verse, is the form of Hiranyagarbha, not the four-headed Brahma, which will be described later, right? The four-headed Brahma is in the universe. outside, then that's prajapati. You know, it's a form of Hiranyagarbha. Hiranyagarbha is that form of the Lord. I'm the creator, right? And Shiva's I am the destroyer means you're dealing with ignorance. So he's the Lord of the living entities because they're all in ignorance, right? Hiranyagarbha is the creator of various devatas dwelling within the coverings of universes. These forms should be understood to reside in the water surrounding Mahavishnu. Okay, so they're all there within. So Mahavishnu is there with his whole entourage of the original forms and everything like that. That's why you see is that Mahavishnu can be there sleeping on the Garbhadak ocean, right, in Yoga Nidra, which is Rama Devi in the form of Yoga Maya. But at the same time, as we see when Krishna and Arjuna go to visit Mahavishnu, then he's there in his palace with all his associates and everything like that. So both things are going on. He is sleeping there, but then due to his desire to for the creation and all that, then he's expanded all the primordial demigods and everything like that. And then they're all there, you know, and that includes himself as that form of Vishnu. And so then he's going to have that original form there. And then with them, he's going to be performing his pastimes. So both go on at once. Right? And that's always going on because he's always with them. Right? At the same time, he's always sleeping and the universes are coming in and out of his, out of the, you know, the pores. The hair hole is where the hair is, then in that you can see it's pretty small. So out of that is the universes are coming out of something that small on Mahavishnu. Right? And it coming in and out easily, so it doesn't mean that it's like packed in there and he's sitting on there going, and then they come out. No, it's very easily coming in and out as he breathes. And then when he breathes in, they come and he breathes out, and also coming out of his pores. So it's like, yeah, it's all happening. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains how the initial forms differ from the subsequent ones. Hiranyagarbha, the seminal principle, the portion of the Supreme Lord, is the prime progenitor who is different from the four-faced Brahma. This same Hiranyagarbha is the principle of seminal creating energy of every Brahma belonging to each of the infinity of universes. Right, so this Hiranyagarbha, that the seminal principle means, because from there is that it means everything comes up because of that, right? That's the principle how it works. It's from that it'll take place, right? That's the masculine aspect. The divine masculine manifested halo, Shambhu, is the plenary manifestation of his prototype Shambhu, the same as the divine, primary divine masculine generative symbol Shambhu, whose nature has already been described. Right? So you're going to have manifested halo because you said he's in a distinct form, Mahavishnu. Then he expands that aspect of him that will deal with the material creation as the halo of him. Then it takes on the form, right? And then that form then expands into the universe. Because I think later it will say that that portion that when he glances, that reflects back from the material energy, that's Sadashiva. That portion that enters, then that'll be the Shiva we know in the universe. Does that make sense? Yeah. Vishnu is the integral subjective portion of Mahavishnu. Hence, he is the great lord of all the other lords. The progenitor, Brahma, and Shambhu are the dislocated portions of Mahavishnu. Hence, they are gods with delegated functions. Right? So, Mahavishnu comes himself. Garbhadaksha Vishnu, Kiradaksha Vishnu, so as himself he is coming, right? So there's going to be the form where he interacts with his devotees, you know, as Bhagavan. In other words, you could say the difference would be Mahavishnu is the aspect of the localized, you know, the aspect of the, you could say, you're going to have that localized feature and you're going to have the Bhagavan feature. So as Paramatma, that's localized. So he's there sitting in the water. So he's here, you know, in this quadrant. But as Mahavishnu is the Bhagavan feature, you know, taking that, and then there's the pastimes with his eternal associates there, the primordial demigods, right, or the prototypical, right? Then you're going to have in the universe, and Garbhodaksha is going to be there with his, you know, sleeping on the ocean and all that, but at the same time, he's going to have his associates, right, that are then from this side. Then you're going to have Kiradaksha, and it'll be the same. He's Paramatma in everyone's heart, at the same time, he's there on interacting with all the devotees on Svetadri, right? You know, Brahma and the demigods, when they have a quandary, then they go to Svetadri, sit on the ocean, the beach, right? And then Brahma meditates, and in this way, then Kiradaksha Vishnu then speaks to him through the heart. Then he explains to the demigods, right? Does that make sense? So like that, it has. Hence, the gods are with delegated functions. Right? His own potency being on the left side of Godhead, Vishnu appears in the left limb of Mahavishnu from the unalloyed essence of his spiritual chit potency. Right. So the left limb. So the right limb then is Brahma. Left is there, and then the halo, or what's between his eyes, that will be Shiva there. Does that make sense? Yeah. Very good. Okay. Text 16. Shiva, presiding deity of Ahankara. Then the universe became filled with Ahankara by the agency of Shiva. Brahma Samhita 5.16. Filled with Ahankara, right? Because the Golden Age, he has that aspect of Hiranyagarbha, right? The creative potency, right? The seminal principle. But now, with Shiva going, then it becomes filled with Ahankara, because you need false ego to identify with the 8,400,000 species of life, the 14 planetary systems, this, that, law. You know, I say, you know, your cousin Manny, you know, all those kind of. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur further elaborates on the nature of Ahankar. The basic principle is the Supreme Lord Himself, who is the embodiment of the principle of existence of all entities devoid of separated egotisms. Right? Separating egotisms. So, the living entity's natural thing is their relationship with the Lord, because they're part and parcel to Him. So He's the basic embodiment of the principal existence of all living entities, right? We're not considering the egotisms, the separating egotisms, right? Because in the spiritual world, they're non-separating egos, right? Their identity is, I am servant of the Lord. And then they may have a particular relationship and rasa and everything where they interact with the Lord based on that particular ego or that identity, but it's not separated, right? So the jivas, all jivas, like you see when Lord Chaitanya describes his philosophy, then in the Sambandhigyan section, you're giving the nature of jivas. So that's what we're talking about here. The non-separated means the internal potency and all that. That's another thing. Means they're already included. But then the jivas, then we're talking about the name. Then you have those jivas who are conditioned. They have the separating egotism, right? Then you have the liberated souls who then don't have that separating. They're like the internal potency that simply their identity as servant of the Lord. They simply see in that way. They don't see otherwise. Does that make some sense? Yeah. In this mundane world, the appearance of individual entities as separated egotistic symbols is the limited, perverted reflection of the unalloyed spiritual chit potency. Right? So you have the unalloyed spiritual chit potency, which is that knowledge and action and everything like that. that is there in the spiritual world. Then, unfortunately, the living entities in the material world, then they are, how you say, the symbols of this separated egoism, right? Which means I'm the controller and enjoyer. Then they have their specific position according to their individual desire, where their karma is, and it'll be manifest in a very specific way. Right? But otherwise, they do all, because they're all coming from Krishna, they all fit into the category or of what their nature is. So the their essentialistic definition is there, right? And so then you have the essentialistic definition of just the nature of the jiva in its, you know, in its as a energy of the Lord. Then you have those that then take on specific false identities, and then those who take on specific transcendental identities. But in any case, the jivas all fit into that they have the nature of jivas. Then you're going to have then here, then the separated egotistic is still going to fit in, still within 8,400,000 species, you know, and then all the different situations and the combinations that you're going to have and all that kind of jazz. And as representing the primal masculine divine generative function, Shambhu, it is united to the accommodating principle, right? The accommodating means it accommodates everything. What you need, this amount of material energy made into this, this much space and all that, it accommodates. As we remember, we saw is that Rama Devi, the consort of Mahavishnu, then she is taking on the, means it's the, you could say is the form of yoga maya. Right, so that yoga nidra is a form of yoga maya. So that yoga maya is what's transforming here, right? And so that's the all-accommodating principle, is that transformation of yoga maya, because she accommodates all the desires of the living entity, the particular bodies they have, everything like that. They all go on, just like you see the mother accommodates the form of the child. Right, it's just the jiva, it's just the soul, and but then the whole body is accommodated and all the all that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, it is united to the accommodating principle, namely the mundane female organ, which is the perverted reflection of the spiritual chit potency, Rama Devi. Right, so that's the mundane female organ. So then this goes back to Mataji's question before. So you have the mundane female organ, and you have the mundane masculine organ, right? And so that's just going to be the going back to there. It's going to be the perversion of that, of the original going back to Rama Devi, then, you know, as Yogamaya, then transforming into Mahamaya, right? Does that make sense? And that's then what's arranged here. This function, Shambhu, is nothing but the mere material causal principle embodying the extension of the shape of ingredient as matter. Mere material causal principle. Okay. Embodying an extension in the shape of ingredient as matter. Right? So you simply, as it means, the function is that you're dealing with, that they're going to be coming into, because the feminine aspect is creating the forms that the living entity identify with. Right? The mere causal principle. Now, because they identify, I am this body. You know, the living entity at the end of life, what he's thinking of, that's his identity, that's where his values, that's where whatever he's taking shelter. So that's what then the next life starts off as. Does that make sense? You know, so that's going to be there. So that false ego in that, that's that point of Shambhu. So you have the form that's created by the material, external energy, you know, and then you're going to have the false ego that's there, that combines, and now I'm the controller and enjoyer, I am this and everything like that. The Jiva, you know, which is the living entity, that's coming from Vishnu. But still, who is the controller of that, the lord of that, is going to be Shambhu, because he's the one that's dealing with this covering of I'm the controller and enjoyer, this avidya that's there, and then the manifestation, particularly of the ignorance that they have in the world. Right? Because it's based on the false ego, I am this body. Right? And you have the three kinds of, like we said, was it Taijasa? What did we say? Oh my God. Each time you make the list, you forget, right? What were the three?
Taijasa, Tamasa, Vaikarika.
Taijasa, Tamasa, Vaikarika. Yes. So then you're going to have all those three, which deal with, you can say as well, he's just ignorance like that, but goodness, passion, and ignorance are three kinds of false ego. Then you have the destruction that's going to be there, and he takes care of that. But still, the false identity with these three is still coming from him. So it doesn't matter what the body may be, you know, like the cow, the body is in the mode of goodness, but the living entity, even though it's there, it's still covered by ignorance, by false ego. Right? So it identifies as a cow, so it acts as a cow, even though it is a pure spirit soul. Again, when in the course of the progressive evolution of mundane creation, each universe is manifested, then in the principle of Shambhu, born of the space between the two eyebrows of Vishnu, there appears the manifestation of the personality of Rudra. Yet, under all circumstances, Shambhu fully enshrines the mundane egotistic principle. Right? So, in other words, Shambhu always has this the mundane context of egotistic principle, but he's going to appear within the universe as Rudra, right? So here it's making the difference of Shambhu and Rudra, like that. I think in some other places you have Sadashiva and Shambhu, or it could be saying that the Sadashiva is that halo, and then when he manifests as Shambhu, and then that transforms as Rudra. But in any case, whatever it is there, and that so. This point of mundane egotistic principle in these three features that are the features of the ego for the three modes, they're going to be there, right? So he's always going to be there. It's always going to have that. That's what makes Shiva, you know, the Shambhu, what he is that mundane egotistic principle. That's what's there, because to have that interest in it, you have to have that. So where does that come from? It has to come from Krishna. Everything has to come from Krishna. So therefore, he's going to control that, but he controls it as Shambhu. As Vishnu, he doesn't control it. He controls it as his expansion as Shambhu. But the innumerable jivas as spiritual particles emanating from the oversoul in the form of pencils of rays of effulgence. Right, so the oversoul, that's interesting, oversoul. So then the Supreme Lord, that they're emanating from him, like in the form of pencils of rays of effulgence, means that, you know, that you know, like you have the individual ray of light, you know, of the sun. You know, there's the sun, and it's the form of all these pencil rays of effulgence, right, the sun rays. So in the same way, the sun, the jivas are like sun rays coming from the Lord, you know, or the other example given is sparks out of a fire. Right? The innumerable jivas as spiritual particles emanating from the oversoul in the form of pencil of rays of effulgence have no relation with the mundane world when they come to know themselves to be the eternal servants of the Supreme Lord. Right? Means they're only part of this material existence as long as they don't see themselves as the servants of the Lord, right? So, but as long as they do, they identify themselves. So that's why they're part. Technically, they're not part. They're part of Krishna's, you know, just arrangement. So they're still having their relation. But since they don't see it that way, they take part in the material creation. They are then incorporated into the realm of Vaikuntha, right? So when they see themselves as the eternal servants of the Lord, they have no relation with the mundane world. And then they are incorporated in the realm of Vaikuntha. Right? But when they desire to lord it over Maya, forgetting their real identity, the egotistic principle Shambhu entering into their entities makes them identify themselves as separated enjoyers of mundane entities. Hence, Shambhu is the primary principle of the egotistic mundane universe and of perverted egotism in jivas that identifies itself with their limited material bodies. Right? So this is then the principle is that, do you have that? The soul is there. He has his internal nature. And depending upon his interest, then there's the matter. But if he takes on this idea, I'm the controller and enjoyer, therefore, then you have the principle of the Shambhu, like that. Shambhu enters into the entities that they identify themselves, that now they can express that identity. Because in the spiritual world, in your spiritual form, you can't express that I'm the controller and enjoyer. So therefore, you have to have that mood, that feature of Shambhu enter entering as that false identity. Then they can take part in the material existence and try to control and enjoy, because in the spiritual world, nothing there is going to function like that, and you wouldn't be able to, because you want to control things, but you can't, because you know, even the rice there is fully Krishna conscious, so it's not going to cook for you. It's not going to allow itself to be cooked, so you can eat it without offering it to Krishna. The water won't boil it. The fire won't boil the water. They're all Krishna conscious entities. So therefore, then when that's there, that enters, then one has to function within the material world. Does that make sense? That's the point. So when they come to know, then they're here. And if they don't, then they become covered by that. So that's the point. The jiva is tatastha, it's marginal. That means it could go either way. So depending upon its inclination, that's the way it goes. Right? So most are in the spiritual world. We see 3/4 of the cosmos is that. 1/4 is here. But fortunately, it's not that there's, 1/4 of the living entities is only, 25% is only 10%. So 1/10 comes here, like that. Yeah. So at least if nothing else, you can feel, yes, I accomplished it. I came here. I did it. Yeah, like that. But, more glorious is the ones that identify as servants of Krishna and go to the spiritual platform. Because there you can always enjoy. Because here, even I have that, and I try to identify with it. I identify, but then when I leave this body, I don't remember the last one. So there's not an ongoing thing that I get to enjoy being the enjoyer of the world. It just keeps, you start over again and start like this, and it doesn't work. Because the point is it doesn't work. So if it was connected consciously, you'd be so bummed out because you've tried all 8,400,000, it still doesn't work. You'd be in a bad shape, but you forget each time. So each time, oh, new, fresh. Yeah. What's this? What's going on? Like that. That's why children are so inspiring, because they're fresh in their idea. Yes, I could control and enjoy this. The adults have started to get a bit jaded. It's not working out. So the kids give that fresh life, Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. And then the grandchildren even more, because now you're really over the hill. I mean, there's the unacknowledged over the hill at 30. Then you have the serious over the hill, later. And so then, it's even more, fresh, nice, this, that, and so more inspiring. And they've kind of a bit given up on us, so they can take more advantage and enjoy more the interaction with the kids like that, while the parents are a bit too absorbed in what they're doing and trying to arrange everything, so they don't necessarily enjoy it as much. So but in any case, it goes on. That's why people get the inspiration, well, maybe it's not so bad, it could be better, like that. But once they figure out, nope, that's just the way it is, it's not getting any better, then they take up, I'm the servant of Krishna, and then they get transferred to the spiritual realm. Then eternally, you have the same, you're in the same identity, the same ego eternally. So therefore, you see the ongoing, the ever-increasing bliss of the spiritual world. Well, here you see it go up and down and this and that and so many things, but there it just keep ever is ever increasing. So there's no need to have creation and destruction there. That makes some sense. Oh, we're over the time anyway. Okay, so I'll end here. Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nanyatai Gaura Premanandi, Hari Hari Bol Gaura.